When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb?" When they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You are looking for Jesus, the Nazarene, who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter he is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone, because they were afraid. What I just read is the earliest known account of the empty tomb story. Now, from a Christian perspective, this is completely expected. This is a well-known story in the Christian tradition. There are no surprises here, and it probably doesn't sound anything but perfectly normal to a Christian audience. To the secular ear, it is at best a tall tale. And, you know, this really is par for the course when it comes to the canonical Gospels. If you read them, they're pretty much non-stop, at least the narrative parts are pretty much non-stop, miracle stories. If Jesus is ever doing anything, he's usually doing some kind of miracle. Now, the historian's job is to look at these sources and try to dig out some kernels of historical truth behind these, well, what look like tall tales. Now, that is a truly daunting task, but it's not always impossible. In fact, scholars have established with a great deal of confidence some hard facts about Jesus' biography. He was, after all, Jewish. He was a religious leader. He was baptized by John the Baptist, and he was crucified on the orders of the Judean prefect Pontius Pilate. Of course, we do know other things about Jesus as well, although usually with much less confidence than those other facts I just mentioned. But one story in particular, the empty tomb, is of considerable interest, not so much to historians necessarily, but definitely to apologists. The idea here from an apologetics perspective is that if the empty tomb can be established as historical, then that can be a component in some kind of Christian apologetic argument for the resurrection of Jesus, a historical argument, in other words. The problem from a secular point of view is that when you read these stories, not just the one in Mark, but also, you know, Matthew and Luke and John, these empty tomb stories look like they're fake. They look like they're fables or tall tales. Even if they might have a kernel of historical truth, they sure don't look that way, at least at first glance. Now, the reason that I'm saying all this is to emphasize something that's often overlooked, which is that the burden of proof here is really on the Christian apologist or the Christian believer. Now, I know some of you might be cringing when I use that phrase, burden of proof. It's a sketchy phrase, I know. All I mean is that unless there are other arguments or other evidence or some other information that we can, you know, bring to bear on this question, our conclusion is going to have to remain that the story is fictional and that if there is any kernel of truth behind it, we don't know. So, what can be done here? Well, biblical historians have developed certain criteria that can be used to help aid in this task of digging out historical kernels from this mess of, well, again, from a secular perspective, really terrible sources. So one criterion that apologists like to bring up is multiple attestation. This story appears in all four canonical Gospels. And yes, there are discrepancies. The women are different. Slightly different things happen when they get there. But the core of the story, the fact that there were some women who went to Jesus' tomb after he had been buried, found it empty, this core is attested in all four canonical Gospels. Furthermore, the Gospel of John seems to have no direct literary dependence on any of the synoptic Gospels, nor vice versa. So what we have here appears to be multiple independent attestation. But the independence is only of a literary nature. I don't think anybody supposes that the author of the Gospel of John wasn't aware of the same stories that the author of Mark or Matthew or Luke was aware of when it came to the empty tomb. These gospel accounts, let me remind you, are not eyewitness accounts, at least not as far as we know. Nevertheless, the point is not lost on me. This empty tomb story was very popular in early Christianity, and the four best sources that we have about the life and times of Jesus all agree that it happened. On the other hand, these four Gospels also agree that when the women went to the tomb, there was a supernatural being there to greet them. In the three Synoptic Gospels, this appears to have been some kind of an angel or angels, and then in the Gospel of John, it was Jesus himself supernaturally raised from the dead. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that multiple independent attestation is indeed a point in favor of the historicity of the empty tomb account. But it's just such a very weak point. I mean, we don't know who wrote these Gospels. We do know that they were written decades later, and the story itself contains overtly supernatural elements. And let me be clear here about what I'm saying. It's bad enough that the Gospels are already filled with miracle stories and other supernatural things. That really hurts the credibility of those authors. But what I'm talking about is something else altogether. The story itself is not credible. As far as we know, again, from a secular perspective, there are no such things as angels. In light of this, it's deeply puzzling when people like William Lane Craig, who is a scholar of sorts, tries to argue that this story passes what he calls the criterion of verisimilitude. To quote Dr. Craig, "Verisimilitude is a fancy word for the stories being true to life, given what we know of the culture at that time," unquote. He then continues to cite Bart Ehrman as a source to claim that, quote, "Jewish women did visit the tombs of the recently deceased to anoint the corpse," unquote. So, okay, that part of the story does appear to be historically plausible, fair enough. But you have to weigh that against the utter implausibility, really almost impossibility, of the rest of the story. Now, the Christian apologist wants to turn around and say, yeah, but that one part kind of makes sense. Okay, but the rest of it really doesn't. So it's not really that impressive of an observation, is it? So verisimilitude really doesn't cut it here. But I've saved the best for last, because there is one argument that has managed to persuade historians, even some secular historians. It's based on the very unfortunate truth that women were not respected in that day and age. And so the argument goes, if this story was invented, the inventors wouldn't have had women discovering the tomb, they would have had men. Now, you can find this argument, or variations of it, all over the place in the literature, but since this is about Christian apologetics, let me go ahead and quote a Christian apologist, William Lane Craig. He says, quote, "Most scholars think that the women's discovery of the empty tomb is probably historical because any later legendary account would likely make male disciples discover the empty tomb rather than women, who were not regarded as credible witnesses in Jewish society and occupied a lower rung than men in a patriarchal society," unquote. The idea here is that if they were going to invent a story, they would want credible witnesses, male witnesses. Women aren't credible. Nobody's going to trust a woman in this particular society. But there's one glaring problem with this version of the argument, which is that the gospel authors aren't asking us to accept women as eyewitnesses and trust their testimony. No, at least in the case of Matthew, Luke, and John, we'll get to Mark in a moment, it's a special case, but in the case of the other three gospels, they have male witnesses. In Matthew, the Roman guards witness the empty tomb. In Luke, it's Peter, and in John, it's both Peter and another unnamed disciple. So, at least in the case of those three Gospels, this version of the argument doesn't hold up. The Gospel of Mark, on the other hand, as I have said, is a special case. Now, I read that at the beginning so you know exactly what it says. The women encounter an angel, and the angel tells them to go spread the news that the tomb is empty and that Jesus is risen, but the women don't do it. They don't say anything to anybody because they're too afraid. So even though Mark doesn't record any male witnesses, the argument in this case still breaks down. The reader is not being asked to trust the testimony of the women, nor is any other character in the story. According to Mark, wherever the story came from, it wasn't the women, because the women didn't say anything to anybody. So I think it's clear that that naive version of the argument about women's testimony not being trusted in that particular society just doesn't hold up in light of the gospel accounts. But there is a weaker, different version of the argument that does somewhat hold up. On this more modest version of the argument, the apologist can admit that, okay, so we're not being asked to trust testimony of the women, that doesn't hold up. But nevertheless, in the gospel accounts, all four of them remember, the women are given a place of honor as the first people to discover that Jesus had risen from the dead. According to the Christian apologist, surely if the early church had just invented the empty tomb story, they wouldn't have given that place of honor to those women. So, as I've said, some historians, although not all to be sure, have been impressed by this line of argument. As you might imagine, I myself am not as impressed. Why not? Well, in general, I'm just very skeptical anytime somebody tries to tell me what somebody else would have done in some hypothetical situation. We're just not that good at predicting behavior. And even if we were, well, we don't know who invented the story. We don't know what their biases were, what their worldview was, what they thought of women. We don't know whether they were women. Bart Ehrman is one of those historians who was once impressed by this argument, but now no longer is. I'd like to read to you something that he wrote. Quote, "This claim that it was specifically women who found the empty tomb makes the best sense of the realities of history. Preparing bodies for burial was commonly the work of women, not men. And so, why wouldn't the stories tell of women who went to prepare the body?" Unquote. So you might have noticed there's a certain irony here. It's the apologist who wants to point out that it's historically plausible for the women to visit the tomb. And that's true, except it certainly doesn't outweigh the implausibility of them meeting an angel when they go there. So not only is this so-called argument from verisimilitude unimpressive in its own right, it actually undermines another argument that the apologist wants to make here about the women having a place of honor. In sum, when you actually read the empty tomb accounts, as told in the four canonical Gospels, you find that they read like tall tales. They're not credible on their face. The arguments that apologists offer to make up for that fact are universally unimpressive. The argument from multiple independent attestation might be more impressive, except we don't know who the Gospel authors were, nor under what circumstances they wrote. We only know that they wrote decades later and packed their accounts full of miracle stories. The argument from verisimilitude is almost laughable in light of the fact that we have an angel telling the women that a man has risen from the dead. Now, again, I'm not closing my mind to extreme possibilities, but that is not true to life, as the saying goes. The argument from women's testimony being considered untrustworthy in that society doesn't hold up for the simple fact that the authors of the Gospels don't ask us to trust the testimony of the women. Finally, the argument that somebody inventing the story wouldn't have given the women that place of honor as the first people to discover the risen Jesus is just too speculative. It's not based in any hard evidence or fact. I don't claim to know whether there is a kernel of historical truth behind these empty tomb stories. Like so much in ancient history, this issue really boils down to a question of personal judgment. Do you trust the sources? Does the story seem plausible? For me, the answers are clear. No, and no.